Tuesday, July 28th, and this is Josh and Micah Save the World, an opinion podcast about stuff we like and stuff we don't. And today, Josh, what are we talking about?
We are going to talk about smart homes, which are very up and coming right now.
Smart homes.
Yes, smart homes.
Homes that are smart.
Yeah, so basically they do math for you. They do really like any task that you want it to.
My phone does that.
Yeah. So basically it's your phone in your house now. You don't need a phone.
My house is now a phone.
It's essentially, yes.
Great.
But no, that's not how it works. But yeah, so we'll be talking about smart homes, basically giving an overview of just some of the things that have like developed into the smart home world, because it's really the last couple of years taken off as far as just what has been available and what's been added to the smart home basically ecosystem, and all the different companies too that have developed their own different styles of what they want in their smart home, from appliances to speakers to all sorts of little switches that you can get for various assortments of things. And so yeah, we'll just talk a little bit about that and some of the bigger companies that are doing that. And yeah, but that's primarily what we're going to talk about today, Micah.
Sweet. Well, I have many smart home devices, and you also have smart home devices.
I do, yes.
Maybe we should talk about a little bit of like, what is a smart home? Do you want to elaborate a little bit on that?
So basically the gist of a smart home is anything that's connected to, the internet, essentially, is the gist of a smart home. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like that's pretty much the, gist of what it is. I mean, as long as it's able to communicate with some sort of, like network feature, whether that be straight over the Wi-Fi or through your phone or through a smart assistant on your phone or a speaker, and then tell the device to do something like turn on a light or turn off a particular, you know, switch that's controlling, you know, how you set your appliances on your washer and dryer to tell you that it's, you know, the dryer's done now, you can go get your clothes, that sort of a thing, instead of having the annoying dryer sound that everyone always turns off. But that's the gist of it.
Yeah, Wikipedia, you know, all-knowing, defines smart home technology, also termed home automation, is any device or appliance in a house that connects via a LAN or in the internet. So, yeah, I think we've nailed it there. So, what are like some of the most common smart home things that we could probably talk about right now that people might be interested in?
Yeah, so the big sellers or the main market of smart homes right now is a lot to do with light bulbs, switches that turn on particular devices like coffee makers or lamps. Sometimes they also have like cameras are in that mix as well. And now more of the market is starting to get in towards like locks for your door per se. Now they have appliances that are connected to the internet. You can have a fridge that tells you what's inside your fridge without you needing to open it, type of a thing, and all sorts of, like, I'm pretty sure if you can think of a way to make something smart, there's probably a company somewhere that's either developed it or is developing some sort of smart appliance for it. But the main ones, you know, what I was saying earlier, the main ones are, you know, having light bulbs that are smart that are connected to the Wi-Fi or some form of like hub before they're connected to the internet, and which we'll talk about just some of those. So the, like talking about light switches, so how are lights essentially connected to the internet, Micah?
Well, theoretically you have a couple options that are most common right now for getting your lights connected to the interwebs. And it's kind of like you'd mentioned, I have a bunch of smart bulbs. So all I have to do is unscrew a standard light bulb from the socket, screw in a smart light, and that my particular model connect directly to my home Wi-Fi network. So I get on the app on my phone, get them signed into my Wi-Fi, and they are set up. Mm-hmm. Some other options like require a hub or, you know, a centralized device that connects to the internet and then, sends out another type of radio frequency to the light bulb, like a Zigbee signal or, mm-hmm. or Bluetooth or something like that. And so that kind of covers the bulb side of things, but then you also have smart light switches, which actually require being rewired. You basically would, remove the regular standard, two pole, double pole, single pole, whatever type of light switch you've got in mm-hmm. in your wall, and just pop that guy out and pop in a smart switch that also then would connect to the network, generally over Wi-Fi, and
because one of the main downsides of having a light bulb per se that's connected to it is you always have to keep it on.
That's right. And so, like, for example, before we started recording, I have smart bulbs in my office and the light switch had gotten shut off, which it's not the end of the world. The ones mm-hmm. I have reconnected to the internet like super fast, so it's really not like a huge issue. But yeah, depending on the model and all of that, if it gets shut off, then you have to wait for the light bulb to kind of boot back up and get connected before you're able to control it.
Yeah, so. And so some people, that's a deal breaker because some people still want to turn the light on and off, and that smart switch that's connected directly to the electrical outlet, that allows it to have the freedom of turning it on and off whenever you want, whether you want to tell a particular device to turn it off or you want to manually turn it on or off. That'll do mm-hmm. it. But the downside of that is they tend to be more expensive than getting a pack of smart bulbs.
Exactly.
So there's some pros and cons in where you want to go and how you want to, go about doing that. But talking more about the smart devices, you have the side that is like the plugs, which were kind of like the main thing, or the main first kind of thing that took off in the smart home market were smart plugs.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of like the broader adaptions of the technology at scale for like your kind of consumer grade devices. And
yeah, because it really doesn't require much as far as user knowledge, besides having the app that really tells you what to do. Yeah. Which
super plug and play. Yes. Yes, a lot less finicky than they used to be. We have a couple of really old ones that I had bought when they first came out, and I won't drop names on the brand, but they were awful. I haven't tried anything recent from this brand, just haven't had the need to purchase mainly smart plugs anyway, but yeah, they would drop connection, they regularly like just wigged out and wouldn't work at all.
Yep.
Couldn't get them to connect, but yeah, it has definitely been vast improvements since those ones came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that was when smart homes kind of took off in the mass consumer market. That was probably the first widely available, just because it didn't require you to mm-hmm. literally have anything besides the appliance you're wanting to turn off, per se, like a fan or a right. lamp.
And they were relatively affordable too, speaking, yeah. In the grand scheme of it. So
yeah, and mostly because you could get like a pair of two for, maybe $25-$30. And most yeah. people don't need more than one when they're starting out with the smart home,
usually it's one appliance you're looking to try to automate or turn mm-hmm. on, or
yeah,
that one wall lamp that you want to just have control over or something like that. So
yeah. Now the other thing is, most people when they get this, they're doing it because, or get into smart homes, they're doing it because they have a particular like assistant or smart assistant that they're able to tell, like Google or Amazon or Bixby, should I say, to turn on and off a particular device or light. Mm-hmm. And that's mainly, I would say, why
Did you say Bixby?
I did.
Who even knows what Bixby is anymore? They came and went.
Yeah, that's probably accurate. And now you pretty much don't even use, on my phone, I'd remap that button because they allow you to now. But I was trying to think of another one that was like a mass market one, but really Siri, Google.
Siri, Alexa. And,
yeah.
With Amazon and your Google Assistant.
Yeah. But you kind of had to have those before you can really get into the smart home market.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a key point to talk about is, unless you just want to be pulling your phone out for everything, which we kind of all do anyway, but like constantly trying to open up the correct app and, you know, find the app that goes with the device you're trying to control. And if you're like me, you've got two or three different brands of devices in your house that you control.
Mm-hmm.
And the game changer really was like having that smart assistant, that AI assistant, that, you know, all the major tech companies are putting out now, that is able to just integrate with those. And so you can have your speaker, your home speaker, or your even just the mic on your phone, your smartwatch, whatever you're using. You just, you know, talk to it and tell it what to do, and it'll do it.
Mm-hmm. So now, what device do you have, Micah?
We are all Google. We are Google all the way. Tabs and I both have Google Pixel phones. We've got the Nest Wi-Fi routers and hub. The Google Home Minis in a couple of rooms. Chromecast on the TV. We're pretty much almost all in on Google
Assistant.
So. All Google Assistant. That's all we're working with here. But I'm pretty biased towards the whole Google ecosystem, mm-hmm. with their, you know, Gmail and the G Suite stuff and their apps and all that just works really well together.
Mm-hmm.
And it all plays really nice together for the most part too. So Google continues to acquire, you know, other companies, then their stuff starts to play nice. So it's been working pretty well so far.
Now, I bought the first Amazon Echo when that came out, and I still have the original one, which it doesn't work as well now. I've gotten replacement, but I bought into that kind of right when it came out, and so right now I just have all Amazon smart assistants, so Alexa is what I use. Primarily for everything. I sometimes use Google on my phone. I can turn on certain things with Google on my phone, but...
So are you running kind of Google Home from your phone and then also your most of your stuff on Alexa?
Mm-hmm. I use Google more when I'm not at home.
Makes sense.
Because it's easier to use that than to go into each of the apps that I have.
Right.
Because I've got, I think, three different manufacturers that I have for each of the smart devices that I have.
And that's one of the things that like is really nice about Google Home is that in their app, rather than having to, like, even if you do want to, like, you know, pull open your phone and touch a button because it just, you know, it's easier, you're too far away from one of your speakers or whatever, you know, talk to, like, it's super easy to just flip your phone open and just go to the Google Home app because it composites all of the controls for every device that you have assigned in your home into one, you know, interface to work with, and pretty much allows you full control of all your devices for the most part. So that is another handy feature.
Now I could, if I wanted to, I could use the Amazon app that has Alexa built in and substitute that for my default voice assistant on my phone. However, it's not as well tuned as the regular Amazon Echo devices on the phone. And so I've decided just to not use that because it just doesn't work as well than Google that's pretty much already built in. And so that's the main reason why I use Google and on my phone. But other than that, Amazon pretty much is, I have like three devices in my house and... it works pretty well for me. Now, transitioning, Micah, what for you are the biggest sellers for why you want to like put people towards the Google side versus the Amazon or Siri side?
Well, the one thing I do like about Google is they actually play pretty well cross-platform, as far as like you can get Google Home on your iPhone and like, so they're actually playing with other phone manufacturers a little bit.
Does it work as well on iPhone?
I can't speak to that because I don't have one, but I know it's available.
Okay, because I've personally not known anyone that has like an iPhone that uses like the Google Assistant on it.
Sure, sure.
More of the, you know, G Suite features, because
right.
Apple's pretty
dominant. I know that a lot of the G Suite apps worked really well on my iPad, like mm-hmm. as far as like Sheets and some of that stuff, but yeah, I actually don't think we've really done much with the Google Home stuff on the iPhone. But if someone wants to let us know and they do use that, please send us a comment, because yeah. I would be curious to find out how handy it is. But yeah, really just the integration that Google brings to everything is kind of what I like, and just how, generally speaking, all of their stuff plays. Like, It's literally no hassle to set up. Like, sometimes, like, I've had yeah. some of our smart devices that I've had in the past or stuff like that that you just have to fiddle with, and the setup process is kind of long and tedious in the app, and it's finicky. Setting up our new, like, when we got our Nest router, it was like, I had the router unplugged and the new router plugged in and the Wi-Fi completely set up in like, I kid you not, it was probably like 10 minutes. Like, mm-hmm. it was so quick to walk through the setup with the app on the phone and just get the, you know, security set up on the network and all of that, so.
Yeah. Now, have you had any issues with, like, compatibility, like, with particular devices in Google, or things being built more for, like, the Amazon side versus the Google side, of like things you're wanting to get and then you realize it's not as compatible with the Google Assistant?
We have some home cameras that were kind of built more and sold really popularly on Amazon, the Wyze cams, and they work with Google, but not very much of their features actually integrate into the Google Home app.
Okay.
So, and they don't integrate very cleanly into like using them with my Chromecast or anything like mm-hmm. that. And so they are working on it. That's one of their, like, the partnerships they added to their portfolio later. So they originally were kind of more closely partnered with Alexa and Amazon just for mm-hmm. the retail platform is probably the main impetus for that. But,
yeah.
I could be wrong on that. You might know, you've got some Wyze cams too, but
yeah, I do. I was just wondering, because, like, with me, I think I've run into compatibility issues once or twice when looking at, you know, smart devices I want to mm-hmm. get. But other than that, I haven't really had any issues with that. But, yeah, I would say Amazon, as far as, like, working with other partners to get the compatibility, I feel like it's probably... they were the first one really to get into the smart speaker game per se with
yeah.
you know, the Echo, and then Google followed suit pretty closely after that, and so I feel like they're pretty hand in hand as far as like compatibility, and I don't feel like there's a lot of major differences in them nowadays. I feel like it might just be more to like bigger manufacturers of smart home devices versus like a smaller, you know, new startup type of a deal. Whereas
sure.
I feel like Amazon does a really good job of getting into like the smaller companies, where Google is really good at figuring out the bigger companies and making things more compatible over time with devices they already have and making things easier to use. And per se acquiring companies like Nest.
Yeah. You know, I think that is probably one of the main differences between kind of how Amazon treats their acquisitions, shall we say, versus Google, because it's like you said, like Amazon sees ideas and, you know, buys into ideas mm-hmm. and Google tends to buy more into the products. Like
yeah.
they want to see something that's working already and then add it to their portfolio and, you know, just Google-fy it and make it really compatible.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Amazon kind of gets it right at the beginning and it just kind of grows in their ecosystem then, and it just is already, you know, it's like I don't have a good metaphor for this, but I mean, it's just the way the product is developed is just more integral to the company because it was developed in Amazon, whereas Google has to just, you know, adapt an already good product to fit their ecosystem. So
yeah, which that kind of transitions into the third party aspect of having a smart assistant in your home, because you know when Amazon and Google got into the smart assistant speakers, my Google just went off on my phone. That was funny.
I'm surprised my speaker hasn't gone off yet because the Nest Hub is sitting like right here. So the amount of times I've said Google.
Yeah, I know. But when they really started, they didn't do much as far as making devices that like, you know, made your home smart. They just made the speaker that could answer your questions and like tell you the weather. And it really wasn't until like third party companies decided, hey, can we build something that goes with this so that they control it, then really that kind of transformed the game as far as, you know, then Amazon kind of got into, oh, we could also make these devices too.
Right.
But right now in the market, third party sellers or different companies per se are really probably the strongest as far as making devices that you can use on your smart home, like assistants.
And it gives them all the freedom to say we're compatible with both and develop, you know, products in a way that they can work with everybody. And that is major game changer because you don't have to, like, you're not having to pay. It just breeds the competition to keep prices lower and to push innovation because, you know, you're not saying, oh, well, guess I'm going to have to go buy this, you know, particular one from Google because it's the only one that works. But
yeah,
you know, that open source kind of mentality to, you know, the integration that, you know, both Amazon and Google do a pretty good job at, you know, keeping their code and stuff open source to allow the integration is huge to pushing forward development of new smart home products and startups and all that stuff. So
yeah, because, you know, thinking about my smart home devices right now, I don't have anything else that's Amazon related besides the speakers. Right. All the rest are like, you know, really good third party or smaller startup companies that I, you know, are really good that I've trusted just from, you know, a couple of years of like having their stuff. And but that's probably like the best part of owning, I would say, in my opinion, owning a smart assistant is being able to have the freedom of looking at all these devices and being like, I really like that feature because I know I can use it here. And I really don't think that's a useful feature, so I don't need it.
Right.
Rather than having, you know, here's all the Amazon products you can only get that only work with our speaker, which, you know, some companies don't like to work with other companies. I won't name names, but Apple hasn't really developed, gotten into that market yet. I mean, because they came out with their own Siri is their own smart assistant that's primarily on their phones.
Right.
But they haven't really gotten into allowing Siri to do much else other than be on a phone.
I don't think I know of any product that integrates Siri separately, standalone from your phone or your iPad or whatever. So,
which, you know, it might be a smart decision on Apple's part for not going into that market because it's already pretty heavily saturated and dominated by Amazon and Google.
But Apple people are also brainwashed and they'd probably buy it anyway.
That's probably true. I mean, so you got to get how expensive was the Apple like HomeKit or their smart, or the speaker that you get that like 3D audio or something like that. But
I'd have to look that up.
Yeah.
And that's true. Like, you did bring up Apple HomeKit, and Apple HomeKit is, they have some stuff that they're, you know, had started to try to integrate. I haven't heard much about it recently, but I know that there are some third party products like smart bulbs and stuff like that that are catering to the Apple HomeKit kind of
market. Yeah, I just remember them talking about, you know, developing the HomeKit and releasing it. But outside of that, there hasn't been much noise as far as, you know, you should get this because it, you know, works, or, well, I mean, it's got to work, but, you know, it's really good or that sort of a thing. Primarily, I would say because, like, why would you, you know, if, well, let's, here, let's go back a little bit. Thinking about smart homes, with Amazon and Google already having more of the market than any really device, smart device manufacturer, I feel like it's, as a person that, you know, if you already have an iPhone but have those, like an, you know, Echo or Google Home Mini or whatever you have, what would be the, you know, why would you want to go into the Apple market if Apple is so low on the totem pole? You know what I mean?
Right.
And so, I don't know. I'll have to see what Apple does in the coming years, because, I mean, primarily they're in the computer and smartphone game, most of all.
Yeah.
But they could, you know, change in the next couple of years, but still Amazon and Google are the primarily the main two. Now, let's talk about a big issue that comes with having a smart speaker that is always, always in quotes, listening to you.
Are you talking about the man?
Yes, I'm talking about the man upstairs.
Who's listening always?
Yes. Privacy is probably the
government, the NSA, everybody that's listening to me right now.
Yes. That is probably the main issue that people have. Yes. When I know, for example, like, not that it's like an issue, but my wife isn't so fond of having, you know, Amazon and Alexa that, you know, records you when you trigger it to turn on, and that has microphones that are listening. And I mean, for good reason. There, I mean, you don't want somebody listening to you 24/7. But then on, I would say, the other side of it too, then you should probably also get rid of a phone, but
still got a mic.
Yeah.
Everything has mics nowadays, like your smartwatch, like literally everything has a mic in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we were talking about this at where I work on a podcast, and if a company really wanted to, they can easily make a app or something on your phone that can track you and record you.
Right.
There are some laws that prohibit certain ways of doing it, but if a company really wants to, they could. And
that's why you gotta look at those user permissions when you're downloading those apps, people.
Yeah, which everyone reads them. I mean, I read them all the time, don't you, Micah?
I read a lot of them. I don't know if I've read every user permission for every app I've ever downloaded.
Yeah.
But, like, definitely, like it, and that's one thing I like about my Google phone now is, like, it basically, like, slaps the, like, hardware permissions in your face when you're downloading an app.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes it unavoidable to know what that app's trying to, you know, connect to and utilize on your phone. So.
Which, like, Apple has done that too now.
Yeah.
But yeah, because, like, for example, on certain apps, it'll ask me, it'll give me a prompt and say, do you want to allow this device to find your location all the time only while using this app, or not at all?
Exactly.
And so that gives a little bit more of, I don't know, maybe a placebo effect that they're not always knowing where you are or listening to your location or, you know, what's going on. But it gives a little bit more sense of privacy. But
there's a certain level of common sense required. Like, why is this free calculator app need my microphone and location?
Yep. And so it's things like that that are a big deal when it comes to the smart devices, because, you know, each of them has a, you know, a bunch of microphones that are listening all the time for a specific phrase. And the way that I've described it to people when it comes to the device, it's kind of like a body cam on a police officer. So it's always recording, like, a 30-second loop. And when an officer hits it, it records the 30 seconds before it's hit and then the continuing on after it was hit.
Right.
But it will continually record 30 seconds and delete those 30 seconds.
Right. It'll
just, like, delete it every time it keeps going until it's hit. then it actually starts recording it. And it's the same principle with a smart device, is it's always listening for its keyword. It's never like holding on to that data, but it's always listening for the keyword. And then mm-hmm. once it's triggered, it's recording the 30 seconds before and the 30 seconds after it's, you know, given its answer or done.
Great.
And so, you know, that's, some people may be deterred by that, and that's more of a personal opinion on whether you want to have that in your home. And there's nothing wrong with not having one in your home or having true. One. But
just know if you have a smartphone, it's the same thing. So mm-hmm. your most of your excuses are invalidated by the fact that you own a smartphone. But
yeah, that would be my opinion and Micah's opinion. But
exactly.
We're not gonna, you know,
that's why you're listening to our opinion podcast. So
yes, because
if you want to share yours, matter. Get your own podcast.
But that's the main privacy, I would say,
yeah.
complaint that people have when they're like, oh, you have a, you know, Amazon Echo or, you know, Google Home, like, and then, are you afraid of that type of a thing? And
you're kind of subject to whatever the you know, the developers and the engineers from whatever, you know, devices you're using, whatever their policies that you, you know, whether you know it or not, agreed to by, you know, mm-hmm. downloading the app and you know, installing the device, because there have been, I mean, you go look it up. We won't get too deep in the weeds here, but like some of the companies that do, like Ring doorbell is really popular right now, and they've had some controversial, you know, policies that I think personally I probably would agree with. Like, I think it's a cool concept. I don't know exactly mm-hmm. how the implementation works and, you know, how they're protecting information, but Ring has, you know, always staunchly said they're very careful with, you know, people's private information and, you know, the videos that they're recording and all that sort of thing. But like, they've, you know, You can go look up, you know, what the controversies are. It's pretty easy to find, and some of their policies that they've made, you know, in the last couple of years that some people are either for, you know, strongly for, strongly against, or but mm-hmm. there's a lot of merit to the idea and on some of them, and probably some things that you would need to work out in good detail before you implement it. But yeah, I mean, that's one of the things, is just with any smart home device, it is always connected to the internet. That's exactly what defines it, and that does open you up to certain risks mm-hmm. that you have to kind of be willing to take and manage and adjust to. So,
yeah, and it goes into more of just trusting the companies that you do use.
Exactly.
For example, like Wyze, the company that Mike and I both have devices from them. I remember when they had like a security issue. I don't remember what it was particular.
It was like almost 2 years ago now, a year and a half ago. They had mm-hmm. a data breach of user accounts, mm-hmm. But nothing related to like app security or the actual devices. It was like an internal I think it seemed like it was maybe like a marketing, like kind of department kind of scenario where like they mm-hmm. just had some contact info that got breached. But they really quickly put out a release to all their users and account holders, and
which I think they did a really good job on the end of it of just explaining what happened and mm-hmm. follow-ups of what you can do and that sort of stuff. And so specifically, a lot of companies now, even at my work, the thing that's become really popular is two-factor authentication.
Right.
With a lot of the apps, like for Wyze has that, with a lot of logins. Mm-hmm. And I even have it like for my Gmail, it's set up, like I can do two-factor on my phone. And those, for those who don't know what two-factor means, basically it just requires two forms of authorization when you log in. So if you put in your password, it'll then have another form of authentication where it'll either send you a text to your phone specifically that has another password that you put in, or it has, you know, sends it to an app on your phone that you can put in your fingerprint to unlock it. But it's basically another form of a way to log in that it requires two of them.
Think of it like the missile launches on every movie you've ever seen. There's got to be a second guy with the second key to unlock it, because you don't want just one key because it makes it way easier to launch the missile.
Mm-hmm.
So your internet, your emails are now more secure, or as secure as nuclear missiles.
All right. You heard it here first. Your email is
and I don't secure... know. I don't know why Gmail didn't use that for like a marketing campaign or something. Like that would have been brilliant.
That is pretty good. I haven't heard of that.
I'm gonna have to suggest it to our IT department at work because they're all about the two-factor authentication right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the same thing it is. As it is at work. Which, granted, I will say it's not as enjoyable to have two-factor authentication, and sometimes it's pretty annoying.
It can be downright annoying. It's bit me in the butt a couple times, but it's mm-hmm. overall a good thing to do. So.
Yes. And a lot of companies too now, like for example, one that happened to me recently was my Spotify. Somebody was trying to get into it, which they did. But Spotify would notifies you every time that somebody logs in from a new location.
Mm-hmm.
So basically I was able to go in and change it and, you know, everything was fine. But you know, it's peace of mind knowing that like companies will do that when you log in from a different device or an unknown location that they don't recognize or a different IP address.
You don't normally log in from South Africa. Is this yes. you?
Mm-hmm. So privacy is a big issue that will always be an issue going forward with any smart device, only whether it be a smart home device mm-hmm. or your phone or in your car now.
Another thing we didn't really touch on at all yet is how a lot of these are starting to integrate with your car. Like, hey, Google, start my car.
Mm-hmm. She can't start your car.
I don't have a car with, you know, that's smart. So.
And like, for example, I beta tested Amazon Auto.
Really?
Which basically was... just you stuck like a small, like it was probably like a 3x1 inch like device in your car that was hooked into the like a phone extent or phone outlet, and then went to either your car's Bluetooth if you had Bluetooth, or it went through an aux cord, and then it was connected to your phone via Bluetooth. It was a cool idea. The problem was that they didn't think about the fact that device, because it sits on your dash, I had it in the summer, and so it got so hot that it overheated, and then basically every time I would come into the car, I'd have to reconnect to it. Mm. And it was basically like using it on your phone, but you just had a separate device that you didn't have to use it on your phone. So it really needed a lot of work, and it's not like the greatest device.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting there. It's not there yet.
Yeah.
Getting into the car situation, I think, is interesting. But I will say though, I've used Google to switch songs while I'm in the car.
Mm. Nice. Yeah.
Yes. I don't know if it works with all. I just use Spotify, but I don't know if it works with other, like the built-in app or app like Apple Music and Siri can do it. But I know I've used that when I don't want to take my hands off the wheel.
Well, and even like we're kind of straying a little bit away from like smart homes per se, but like the Android Auto app and Android's Auto integrations with a lot of the car manufacturers is getting much better and utilizing a lot of that same technology. So.
Mm-hmm.
As far as just the assistant AI and all of that stuff, but
yeah, and so that'll privacy, going back to what we're talking about, will always be an issue.
Yep.
But
maybe we'll have to have a separate podcast about automotive smart technology or something.
Mm-hmm. So now, kind of wrapping things up because we're getting pretty close here in time.
We are.
But why have you, Micah, gotten smart home devices? What has been the bent, like, why did you decide to go for it? What do you use it for? That sort of a thing. Why should people want one or not want one?
Like a quick synopsis of the evolution of my personal history with smart home devices would be, I think we got, like, I bought, when I was like living in college, I bought some of the plugs and was using those with my phone and just like to turn on like, you know, like strands of lights or something like that. And it was it's basically just a handy way to add a light switch to a device that didn't have a light switch, essentially, was what I was using it for. And especially since it was like, you know, rental and stuff like that, like it's not like I could just, oh, I want to install a light switch here. So it was like a really cool, cheap, fast, and plug and play solution for that sort of like felt discomfort that I had with just having to like go plug in the lights, you know, or something like that. But and so that kind of just kind of tripped it off for me. And so like as we've, you know, over the years become homeowners and stuff like that, it's just made more and more sense to buy more and more devices for different things. And so like we got into the smart bulbs and I did a lot of research and was like looking for a really specific particular product that, you know, wasn't going to require a hub. So it took me a little while to settle on a set of bulbs that I wanted to use, you know, a brand of bulbs that I wanted to purchase. But I started, you know, we put some smart bulbs in and it's just the little things that kind of help add up to make your experience at home just easier and smoother. Like, you know, I can ask Google to turn the lights on before I walk into the house in the evening, you know, so I don't have to like walk into a dark house. I can see where I'm walking, not fishing around for the light switch or just adding in like the Nest Wi-Fi really helped to kind of make the integration between a lot of these devices more seamless and definitely a lot cleaner, you know, less bugs with connectivity and stuff like that. We added, you know, the Wyze cams just for a little bit of, you know, kind of security, peace of mind. Like, we've always got a camera on that's kind of watching, you know, our doors in our house and keeps an eye on the dogs when we're gone, you know, out running errands or away from the house for, you know, a couple hours. You can kind of see what's going on at home if you need to, what the dogs are up to, what they've destroyed or gotten into while we've been away, you know, that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, I think overall, I think my opinion on smart home stuff is you shouldn't buy it just because it's cool or gimmicky. You should buy it because it's going to work for you. Like the technology shouldn't be more of a hassle to use than just turning on the light. Like if your smart light bulb or whatever is so complicated, so buggy that it's always, you know, constantly not working and you're just like frustrated with it, then it's not making your life better. And anything that you're using for smart technology should definitely be like an addition or an improvement, not more annoying. So like,
yeah. Or if you don't like to turn off the, you know, if you can't, or if you don't want to turn off the light by using your smart assistant and you want to just turn it off manually, then it's probably not for you.
Right. Exactly. Like either buy the right type of switch or don't, you know, like, but don't do something that's going to be more frustrating. So I think it's good to take your time when you're trying to pick out a product and, you know, find something that you need to do some research, ask around, ask other people what they use, you know, for that. And that's probably one of the best ways I've, you know, found products was like just kind of word of mouth. Like that's exactly how I found the cameras was from you. Mm-hmm. Like the Wyze cams was, you know, word of mouth. Someone said, hey, I like this. They're working for me really well. And because it's definitely no fun to buy the product and discover it's super buggy still. And like kind of like was only half developed when they released it. And to be basically, you know, a purchased beta tester is no fun. So, you know, it's definitely good to do the research and ask around a little bit.
Yeah, I would definitely agree because, you know, I've definitely got a lot of stuff set up now. I've gotten more into the automation side of it too, and having things that trigger without me doing anything. You know, having lights turn on a specific time on a specific day. You know, have a certain 3 lights that just turn on after 7:45 or particularly when the sun goes down, they just start, you know, ramping up in brightness until they get to full brightness type of a thing. But at the beginning, I started out with just having 1, you know, Amazon Echo and 2 plugs that you just plug into the wall to a particular lamp that I had by my desk. And that was it.
Right.
And it really wasn't until like I, you know, things started to develop and I was like, you know, it'd be nice to, I could do this, you know, have like the light turn on when I walk in the door, you know, type of a thing when it, you know, after like 8 o'clock and it's dark out, to have the front door light turn on, you know, when it's dark out, that sort of a thing. And then got into the camera side of it too, you know, and talking with you and just having a nice camera that just is always watching the front door, you know, that sort of thing. And so I would say, you know, with the uses that I have with it and, you know, like particular automations, it's, you know, nice to have, and little like things that I've added to, just a light that turns on when it, motion sensor senses motion in a particular place, after a particular time. And so that's like a nice thing that's added, and it adds a little bit of benefit to my life. And it's not like an expensive thing that I got, you know, I got it more on the budget side of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's something that's been nice to have, and, you know, could I get rid of it? Yes. And it's not like I absolutely need these devices to maintain a, you know, working, right, you know, livable condition per se. But I would say if you're someone who's definitely not in the smart home market yet, I would definitely say to take your time with it and don't rush into it. Because, yeah, as Micah said, you don't want something that doesn't work. And do your research as far as like particular companies that people have reviewed and are trusted, you know, have a couple of years of, you know, under their belt of building devices that work well. And maybe just start out with like one or two things like that, just, you know, turn on a particular light and that's it. And then it, but yeah, it takes a little bit to get into all the different aspects that you can have, for a smart home. But all in all, I'd say they definitely, in my opinion, are worth it in the end.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, I haven't put a ton of money into what I have, no. But, you can, if you really want to.
I think that's the kind of the nice thing at where we're at with the development. A lot of these products, you can pretty much spend as little or as much as you want to achieve, you know, what you're trying mm-hmm. to get to with whatever, you know, level of, you know, control and automation you want. Like
mm-hmm.
as simple as that one or two plugs that you plug into the wall up to, you know, blinds and like fully automated appliances and like
mm-hmm.
literally everything in your house you could talk to and have it do, you know, do something automatically. But
yeah, mm-hmm.
I think we've covered quite a bit in this podcast.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. Sorry we didn't get into much of the assistance on like your phone per se, which we could do that in a later episode.
Sure, I think that could definitely be covered in more in detail and other things. And
mm-hmm.
we'd also love to hear from you guys what you guys use. You can hit us up on our like our Instagram and shoot us a message and let us know like what products you're using, what you like. If you have questions about what we're using, feel free to hit us up and we can
mm-hmm.
provide you with more detail about what kind of stuff we have in our houses. And let us know what you want to hear our opinions about. We need more podcast episodes, and if you want to hear them, we'll talk about it. So let's, you know, give us a topic to talk about. We'll give you our opinion on it.
Yes, we will give you your opinion whether you agree with it or not.
Mm-hmm. Whether you wanted it or not. But technically, if you messaged us, you kind of asked for it. So
yes,
I think that's only fair at that point.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Well, thank you guys for joining us on this episode of Josh and Micah Save the World. We will be back in a couple weeks mm-hmm. with another new podcast. So stay tuned and look forward for that one. But thanks again for joining us today. We will see you guys later.
Bye.